This Janet Mufford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org.
This is Janet Mufford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mufford.
Thanks so much for joining us again. Well, several days ago, the National Archives made public more than 2,800 files relating to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy back in 1963. Now, among the revelations, just 2 months before the assassination, the CIA intercepted a call that Oswald made to the Russian embassy in Mexico City, in which he was heard speaking to a KGB officer. And this officer worked for the KGB's 13th Department, which was responsible for assassinations. Not only that, but via cablegram, it was revealed that an alleged Cuban intelligence officer praised Oswald's shooting abilities and admitted to knowing him. But beyond the new light that these files shed on the Kennedy assassination, how does this all relate to what's going on in our day? My next guest says the communists killed Kennedy and they have the ideological motivation to kill President Trump. It's a sobering subject, but we're going to talk about it now with Cliff Kincaid. Cliff is president of America's Survival Incorporated and director of the Accuracy and Media Center for Investigative Journalism. His latest books are Comrade Obama Unmasked and Red Mole Rising, and we're going to discuss his new piece, President Trump's Life is in Danger. So good to welcome you back, Cliff. How are you doing?
Janet, great to be with you.
Great to have you here. What was your reaction, just out of curiosity, to all of this stuff that's been going on recently about Russia and specifically about some of these new revelations on Oswald?
I think we've known for quite some time that Lee Harvey Oswald was the assassin and that he was part of a communist plot. I think the Russians, then the Soviets, and the Cuban communists were in on the plot. Whether the Russians pulled back at the last moment for their own reasons is a matter of debate, but he was a committed Marxist. He was close to the Communist Party. He was involved with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. He had defected to the Soviet Union. He had married a Russian. He came back here, and our security services failed to protect the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, who was probably one of the last anti-communist Democrats. And in the same way, I submit, Janet, that our security services today, the FBI, the Park Police, the Capitol Police, the Secret Service, are failing to protect President Trump.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know just a few days ago we had a very scary sort of security breach, really, surrounding Mitch McConnell and this guy who had gotten in past security. Why do you say that, in fact, we have some problems surrounding the security involving the president? What do we need to know?
Well, in that case, we had a far left winger who got close enough inside the Capitol to have possibly physically assaulted President Trump and Senator McConnell. How he got in to the Capitol, how he got that close. Now, thank God he didn't have a weapon. All he did at the time was throw Russian flags. He was some kind of anti-Trump zealot or fanatic who was yelling treason. But if he had been armed or if he had wanted to, even without a weapon, to attack the president, he could have done so. I've asked the Capitol Police, how did this happen? He apparently was part of a press pool. How he got in there, whether he had a press badge, they won't tell me. And of course, even before this, we had the case of the Bernie Sanders communist supporter, James Hodgkinson, who came to the Washington, D.C. area, hung around Alexandria for a few days, and finally pulled out a weapon and was trying to massacre a group of Republicans at a baseball field. He himself had put on his own Facebook page that he wanted to terminate Trump and terminate the Republicans. You know, why isn't our FBI monitoring these people?
Exactly. And we've got this event coming up this weekend. The Antifa group is going to be demonstrating, and people are wondering whether or not this would be an instigation of more and more violence. But what are your thoughts on the communist groups that are currently at work in America right now?
Well, you know, it's so amazing to me. The Washington Post just the other day ran a whole full page, of course, marking the 100th anniversary of the Russian Communist Revolution, saying, well, communism's basically dead except in some small city in India and in North Korea. Well, that's just nonsense.
Right.
I submit that Russia is still under the control of the communists and the KGB. Of course, Red China is still Red China.
Yeah.
What these countries have done, and then I'd throw South Africa into the mix, because they're ruled by open communists, they've just tried to incorporate some aspects of capitalism in order to get our money, get some aid and trade in order to prop up their system on the road to what they call world revolution and world communism. So the communists are not dead worldwide, and here the number of their local or domestic communist parties have multiplied to the point where Antifa is basically a communist group. You've got another one called the Revolutionary Communist Party, which is run by an old member of the SDS who knew Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. They're threatening revolution and violence on November 4th. But I don't think the FBI is monitoring any of them.
Good grief. Well, you know, this is really troubling because it's been reported that one of these groups, the main group, in fact, that's going to be part of this event on Saturday is Refuse Fascism, which is actually a front group for the Revolutionary Communist Party. I wonder how many people actually even know that.
They don't. You don't get any investigative reporting into these groups. The Revolutionary Communist Party is headed by a guy named Bob Avakian. Again, he was a member of the SDS. That was the forerunner of the Communist Weather Underground.
Yep.
Avakian was on the National Committee of the SDS, along with then Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, who, of course, were communist terrorists, set off numerous bombs. They killed a police officer in San Francisco. They helped launch Barack Obama's political career. You know, there are fugitives still at large from a group called the May 19th Communist Organization, which grew out of the Communist Weather Underground. Who knows? Obama may know where some of these fugitives are, but when he was in office for 8 years, of course, you wouldn't expect the FBI to go after him, would you?
No.
And then you had fugitives in Cuba, like Joanne Chesmard of the Black Liberation Army, William Morales of the Puerto Rican FALN. These were all communist groups, and the ones that are in existence today may, quote, be exercising their First Amendment rights and may threaten violence. And the FBI stays away from them, saying, oh, we can't get involved, we can't monitor them. Well, how many members of Congress are going to have to die or get injured or wounded? Will Trump have to die for the FBI to take this threat seriously?
Well, you're so right about this, because after Hodgkinson went on his rampage, it kind of came and went from the news cycle, just kind of propped up, you know, and everybody reported on it for a couple of days. And then, oh, Steve Scalise is back. He's okay. Okay, let's move on to other things. They're not paying the same attention to it that I'm sure would be paid if the person was an alt-right figure.
And by the way, some of these scandals in the Secret Service, for example, go back to under Obama. When he was possibly a target or possibly being threatened. And yet what happened? Then Congressman Jason Chaffetz was raising some questions about what's going on in the Secret Service, because they sent some of their people down to Colombia supposedly to protect the president, and they hired prostitutes?
Yes.
And when he started raising questions about this, what did we find out? According to the Inspector General, the Secret Service started investigating Chaffetz and going through his own personal files. You know, who's running the show here?
Yeah.
And of course, it's more than a show. We're talking about protecting human lives of our leaders.
Right. So are you then of the opinion that we have the so-called deep state embedded in the Secret Service?
Well, it depends on what you call the deep state. These people are corrupt, and I'm not hesitant to say that, whether it's the Secret Service, the FBI, the Capitol Police. You know, something like this happens, like when this zealot threw the Russian flags at Trump and McConnell, and I asked, well, what's going on? Oh, it's under investigation. Well, that's not good enough. We've had too many investigations, too many scandals. Let's get to the bottom of what's happening and who is responsible.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Cliff Kincaid with us. We're going to come back talking more about Russia and is President Trump's life in danger? We'll return right after this on Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
The gut-wrenching videos of Planned Parenthood workers joking callously about the selling of aborted baby parts are real. I know Big Abortion has spent a lot of money to try to manipulate popular opinion saying they were heavily edited, but they are real. Here is Holly O'Donnell, who worked as a procurement technician for STEM Express, stationed inside some of the biggest Planned Parenthood abortion clinics in Northern California. She's being interviewed by Dana Lash.
If you could impart one message to viewers who see these videos, what's the one thing that you want them to walk away with?
The videos are true, and I wouldn't be putting myself out and speaking if they weren't true. This is my testimony. The people will decide.
Join the fight to defend the unborn and give them the right to live. Every life matters, and we want to see laws passed that uphold these values. Visit CapitolHillBrief.org to fund the fight today. That's CapitolHillBrief.org. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is John's story.
When our daughter Emma was born, my wife and I took a hard look at our finances for the first time, and we didn't like what we saw. My wife suggested that I call Trinity. Immediately when I spoke with the counselor for the first time, she was very helpful and put us on a plan for success. Right away, we knew we'd called the right place. We just want everyone out there who might be in our situation to know that there's help.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your accounts, put a stop to late fees, and reduce your interest rate by up to 60%. Save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. Trinity provides practical solutions and creates hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. My guest, Cliff Kincaid from America Survival Incorporated and director of the Accuracy and Media Center for Investigative Journalism. And we're talking about his piece, President Trump's Life is in Danger. It sounds very ominous, and it is. But when you see what has been going on in our country over the last several years, and in particular, the vitriol that is being raised coming up this weekend, as we know, with some of these rallies, Antifa and some of the other revolutionary groups that are determined to drum him out of office. And Cliff is asking this important question, is his life really in danger? And this is something that is, again, tied to the Kennedy assassination in terms of the subject matter, Cliff, because you point out that the communists killed Kennedy because he was determined to stop communism's advance around the world. Well, President Trump, as you note, has been very forthcoming about the failures of communism in places like Venezuela. Is that ramping up the danger for him to talk in that manner?
I think so. And you know, let's remember something else, Janet. It's a very ominous parallel. Lee Harvey Oswald was a U.S. Marine. Yeah. He was trained as a marksman. That's why he was able to get off those shots and kill President Kennedy. According to Mikhail Pacepa, the former Romanian intelligence officer who looked at the whole thing, he thinks Oswald was probably recruited by the KGB when he was stationed as a Marine in Japan. Well, what's happening today? I'm sure you're aware of this case of the U.S. military cadet who just graduated from West Point, who was photographed with his hat saying, "Communism will win."
Yes, on Twitter.
And who declared himself to be a a person associated with Bernie Sanders' favorite group, the Democratic Socialists of America. Here's a guy, 4 years of West Point. We've trained him at our expense. We've trained him in marksmanship, and now he's a communist?
Right.
I mean, who the heck was paying attention to his education? Why are we graduating communists from our military academies with military and marksmanship skills?
I know, and I just read an item on the internet today saying that the socialist group at Kent State has now been joking around that one of the conservative political leaders on campus ought to be thrown into a gulag. Oh, it was just a joke, ha ha ha. And I'm thinking, why are these people allowed to operate on campus?
Well, and these people, like I say, are zealots, but it's not like they're operating mostly in secret. Here's a guy who went through 4 years of West Point.
Yeah, that's right.
In the case of Hodgkinson, he was openly saying on Facebook, let's terminate the Republicans. Well, we know what that means.
Sure.
He said, let's terminate Trump. And then this guy, this zealot that gets caught in the Capitol throwing Russian flags, he was associated with some so-called progressive organization. But I guess the FBI, they're spending so much time lending agents to Robert Mueller to investigate Trump that they don't have time to investigate those who are threatening the lives of Trump and top Republicans.
I know. It's very disturbing. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I really think your wisdom on this whole matter can really educate people. When we're looking at what's been going on with Russia, you have rightly, I think, called it a misdirection. And we saw the same kind of misdirection in regard to the JFK assassination, where we see what's going on. We see the Democrats after the election trying to make Russia a huge deal, Russian collusion between the Trump campaign and the Soviets, well, ex-Soviets, but as you mentioned before, KGB, FSB, not much difference. But now we find out Manafort and Gates have been indicted. And a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute. What about the Uranium One scandal, which is massive? What about the dossier that we have now seen tied to the Clinton campaign and to the DNC? How come this and not paying attention to the bigger scandal over here? And you kind of piece that together, the Russians' involvement with the Democrats.
I try to, but, you know, I have to say I did another column this week looking at how Trump and Hillary are both pointing fingers and the Democrats and Republicans are facing scrutiny for their own connections to the Russians. And all of that's probably true. I think probably both sides had Russian connections. This isn't a big surprise.
Yeah.
But who's the big Russian agent who rises above it all? Barack Hussein Obama.
Right.
Isn't that interesting? The guy who was raised and groomed by a communist, a Soviet espionage agent by the name of Frank Marshall Davis, who, by the way, this week is holding his first Obama Foundation summit, who's been traveling to Germany, been traveling to Brazil. You know, you look around the country, highways, streets, schools are being named after Barack Obama, our first Marxist president.
Yeah.
When did he ever say anything about the communists killing not only Jack Kennedy, but Bobby Kennedy?
Right.
Bobby Kennedy, who, by the way, as you probably know, Janet, once worked for Senator Joe McCarthy. Bobby Kennedy, who was JFK's attorney general and who investigated communists with the support of J. Edgar Hoover, he was assassinated by a Palestinian Marxist in 1968.
Yes.
We've got to go back in time in history and realize how vulnerable some of these people are, and the FBI has got to start treating these communist groups and the Palestinian or PLO groups inside our own country as criminal organizations.
Yes, I agree. Why was it that you think the Obama connections to Frank Marshall Davis did not receive as much traction as I believe, and I'm sure you believe, they should have received? Obviously, we have a very corrupt mainstream media, but there were important voices during the Obama years saying, hey, wait a second, you know, we don't know a whole lot about this guy. A lot has been blotted out. We don't have a lot of his school records. We've got some holes in his resume, as it were, and we've got this communist connection. Why was that all ignored the way it was?
Well, that's where we get into the names and faces in the so-called deep state. It's not just enough to say, well, there's a deep state, whatever that is. Well, who are these people? Well, yes. I'll give you one name. He's the number two guy at the FBI, Andrew McCabe, mm-hmm. whose wife ran as a liberal Democrat with the support of liberal Democrat money from Hillary and Virginia Governor McAuliffe for the state assembly. She didn't win, but he appeared in some of her campaign literature. Why is it that the number two guy at the FBI is basically the husband of a political operative? How does he get away with that?
I know.
And again, you go through all these things that have happened. Now the Capitol incident with the guy shouting treason, the James Hodgkinson case. We can go back in time, the Secret Service scandals. These just keep mounting up to the point where I hope somebody gets through to President Trump that his life and the lives of his family are in danger if he doesn't clean out the FBI and some of these other agencies soon.
Well, that's the scariest part about it, and a question a lot of people ask. He is the president, after all. Why is Andrew McCabe there in the FBI?
And I'm not saying that he would purposely look the other way if he knew there was a security threat.
Right.
But he is certainly compromised politically. You know, how long is it going to take us if some other horrible incident like this happens to figure out the truth? Here we are, you know, decades away from the assassination of JFK, and the case has always been pretty clear that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist. He was motivated by love for Russia and love for Castro. And here we are 40, 50, 60 years later, probably, we're still going to be debating, oh, was there a conspiracy? Were there two shooters? This, that. Look, let's just be concluding in this a final analysis, he was a communist, and communism is a threat, and we've got more communists on our streets and in our country today than there were when they killed Kennedy.
Right. So what's the best course of action, Cliff, if you could have your best case scenario for the president actually taking these sorts of threats seriously and dealing with them? Does it involve declaring certain progressives domestic terrorists? I mean, what is the course of action?
There's a lot that can be done. Look, Trump, as I say, has to clean out the FBI and the CIA and the Secret Service. I mean, I can go down the whole list of these security agencies. The Congress has to get back to reinstating the committees we used to have, like the Committees on Un-American Activities. Call them Committees on Internal Security if you want to. But get back to the serious nature of investigating these groups as criminal organizations. I mean, in my various books on Obama and even before that, I've listed all these groups. I had a whole list in my book, The Sword of Revolution, on Marxist dialectics. I think it was about 15 or 20. 20 different communist organizations are active mainly on the college campuses, but in our major cities, they're always, now we find out they're getting close to the president himself. I mean, what's it going to take? You know, things go so slow up here. You know mm-hmm. that. I've been around Washington, D.C. for 40 years. But we've got to move quickly because we can't lose another president to an assassin's bullet.
No, and what's really different this time is you've openly had a lot of progressives call for the death of President Trump. It's all over social media. You had Kathy Griffin in the severed head. You had the Women's March standing up there. Madonna talking about blowing up the White House. It's all seemingly shrugged off. They're just talking. Well, you don't talk. I thought you don't talk about assassinating the president without serious repercussions.
And we can't just sit back and expect to get answers eventually from some of these security services or even some of the local police. Look, we're still waiting for any kind of answer, really, regarding the shootings and killings in Vegas.
Oh, that's another story.
You know, how did the guy get all his weapons up there? Whatever happened to that security guard who was injured? Why did he leave the country? Why was the house of the accused shooter raided by somebody? I mean, we just sit back and the FBI says, well, we can't figure this one out, and we're supposed to take it? We're supposed to say, oh, that's all right.
Yes, exactly right. And all the people who have died who were offering alternative narratives to the mainstream narrative that we're hearing from the media, that's a strange thing, too.
This is like the Pink Panther and Inspector Clouseau just bumbling around, but it's not a laughing matter.
No, it isn't a laughing matter, which is why I'm really glad that you're drawing attention to this, and we'll see what happens this weekend. Be in prayer for our country, because these are very serious times. times, and we must take all of this very seriously. So glad for the great work of Cliff Kincaid, and you can go to americasurvival.org to get more information, especially on Cliff's great books. Cliff, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Janet.
All right, God bless, and we'll be back right after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org. Janet Mefford Today. Well, GOP lawmakers have now unveiled their $1.5 trillion tax plan, proposing all kinds of changes for the middle class. But my next guest says when it comes to tax reform, we should leave the mommy wars out of it. What is she talking about? We're going to hear now from Penny Nance, president and CEO of Concerned Women for America. Welcome, Penny. How are you?
I'm great, Janet. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you wrote this great piece on the mommy wars and tax reform. How do those two things come into, you know, play when you're talking about mommy wars and stay-at-home moms versus working moms? And how does that play into the tax issue?
Well, unfortunately, even within tax policy, the mommy wars sometimes exist. The question is, you know, why does one family get a tax credit? You know, because both parents work, but a family in which the mom and or the dad has chosen to be at home and forego, you know, actually sacrificially in most cases, forego a second income, why they don't. And so because the idea is exactly the same for both, the reason that we believe there should be tax relief for families is because they're raising up the next generation of taxpayers. It costs about $250,000 over a lifetime to raise a child, and that doesn't count college costs, by the way.
Wow. And
so the costs are exactly the same. I'm really pleased, though, that Ivanka Trump took this issue head on and really came out strongly in favor of the idea of, you know, just increasing the child tax credit so that every family struggling to, you know, feed their kids, struggling for a tutor, struggling for SAT prep, struggling to allow their kids to participate in sports, they have a little extra hand up. Now, it's not as much as I hoped it would be. It's increased from $1,000 to $1,600 in the House bill.
Right.
But I'm hoping maybe the Senate will do a little better, or even if they take up the House bill, maybe they'll increase it. I was hoping it would be $2,000 or $2,500.
Yeah, the higher the better, but that is good. It is at least an increase.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and then what, a $300 credit for each parent and non-child dependent as well?
Right, which is, you know, think about this. How many people do you know, women, you know, really in our age range, just start taking care of your own parents, and sometimes you have family members living with you. And
right.
Again, it's a strain on the family's budget, but it's what we do.
Yeah.
It's what we do. I just had this conversation, Janet, a conversation. A friend of mine's grandmother is dying, and she's been sitting by her bedside for a couple of weeks now. And she, you know, we were just kind of reminiscing that, you know, caring for new life and caring for the dying often falls to women.
Yeah.
And we embrace it, and we are there to do it, and we love the people that, you know, that we're caring for. But let's recognize that it's hard. And allowing people to keep more of their own money, that, you know, that's what liberals don't get. It's our money.
Yes.
It's not the,
right.
The government doesn't own all of our stuff and then let us keep some of it. No, it's ours. And then we give the government some of our taxes, and
exactly.
We're happy to do that, but fairness is important, and allowing families to thrive is essential for our civilization.
Absolutely. And you think of all the families right now, as you've mentioned, whether it's working parents or stay-at-home moms. A lot of the stay-at-home moms that I know, and I've been one of them, are moms who are also homeschooling. So if they're paying property taxes on their homes, they're not even taking advantage of what they're paying for, which is money going directly to the public schools.
Well, I'm were one of those parents because my kids attended Christian school. Again, nobody made us do that, obviously. But, you know, we're putting in money into the system that we don't even get to utilize. But, you know, all parents, again, are raising up the next generation of good parents are raising up future taxpayers, right?
And right.
We're trying, and people that are going to pay into the Social Security system are the people that are, you know, are getting ready to retire. And so we, again, are grateful to be able to do that. And if we're able to do that, we're raised good citizens, then we've succeeded, and we welcome that. But let's also recognize that the majority of people raising kids, you know, are doing so, you know, with difficulty.
Yes.
And and also, I think this is interesting. There was this, you know, sort of idea floating around at one point that the majority of stay-at-home moms are rich women, and that is absolutely false.
Right.
It tends to actually be women who don't make as much money statistically. So, you know, it's families deciding what's best for them and the extra taxes they would pay and what they'd pay for child care and what they really want to do, the what they want their family to look like. And so at CWA, we affirm all those decisions. We think that's between, you know, a husband and wife as they try to plot out the future for the family and what's best for the family. We made, my husband and I made those decisions that, you know, part of our time when my kids were little, I was at home, and then I worked a little bit part-time, and then eventually when my kids were older, I went back to work full-time. And that's, you know, every year was different almost. And
sure,
that's the way that works for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, a few things that are being proposed here as we've been talking about this $1.5 trillion tax plan. I like this. If this goes through, I'll be thrilled. And it would double the standard deduction for middle class
right.
families. It would go from $12,700 up to $24,000. And also, it would go up for individuals from $6,530 today to $12,000 for individuals. This would take, if this goes through, this would take enormous pressure off middle class families.
Well, and it helps. I mean, it's, look, nobody gets, you know, it's not going to be easy for anyone. I mean, we live in a time where it's expensive and housing's expensive, especially depending on where you live, and families struggle, and sometimes lower income people work two or three jobs. But the people who pay taxes, you know, need a break. And I think this is Congress really trying to follow through on what the president promised. He promised to remember the forgotten man.
Right.
And this is him following through and trying to really do that. And you know, the other point is that it lowers the corporate tax rate. And
yes,
some people are going to say, oh, that's, you know, some sort of help for the rich. Well, I mean, we want people to grow their businesses and hire more people. The
sure.
best thing we can do for a family is give them a job and give them, you know, the encouragement and the self-worth that earning your own way brings. And we want to bring more people into the market and not less.
Right.
So I'm excited about this. It's not perfect. But I think we're moving in the right direction, certainly.
Yeah. Now, one question I had, and I'm interested to get your opinion on this, is the repeal of the estate tax. And under this
yeah.
proposal, it would double the estate tax exemption to about $11 million from $5.49 million. But it's phased out over 6 years. Now, my question with that is, if we wait 6 years, now you have different politicians being elected mm-hmm. or not being elected. Is this just kicking the can down the road as to not getting it done? Shouldn't this have been done just flat out, or was it a matter of the horse trading that they normally do?
Well, I wish it had been done. You know, listen, the really super wealthy know how to put their money in foundations and all sorts of tax shelters. They don't pay this.
Yeah.
Who this hits often is the family that have a farm or have a family business. You know, my father-in-law was in farming for, I don't know, 40 years or longer. And one large combine cost $1 million. And so there, you know, so you could have all this equipment that you use to run your business and run your farm. And by the way, he leased out some of his farm. So there was so much, you know, there was income. It was a money generator before he retired. But, and certainly paid plenty of taxes on all that. But in order, what happens sometimes, and these are really what you want to avoid, is these family businesses that have to sell off part of their farm or sell their business in order to pay the taxes when the dad or mom dies.
Exactly. Exactly. But we're back to the same principle that you mentioned before, Penny, which is it's not the government's money.
Whose money is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, they've already paid taxes.
Yes,
on everything.
Like exactly.
It's not like they got off scot-free. They were alive. But, I do find, and I don't feel like I need to apologize for wealthy people.
No.
I mean, they paid their taxes. So why does Uncle Sam think he has the right to reach in the closet and pick their pockets? I don't think it's right.
Great point. I agree with you, Penny. We're going to go to a break. We'll come back with Penny from Concerned Women for America, CapitolHillBrief.org. We'll return right after this on Janet Meffer Today. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is Ann's story.
I had numerous credit cards and I was struggling with paying them off. I had heard about Trinity, so I made the call. They took care of all of my credit cards and now I am completely debt-free. The people at Trinity are very friendly. They will do whatever you need them to do in order for you to feel better about being in a very difficult place. My name is Anne, and thanks to Trinity, I'm debt-free for keeps.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your account, put a stop to late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. There is hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Did you know that you can help create the next great Christian missionary force? It's true. Right now in Lebanon, there are 2 million refugees living in tent settlements. They're the innocent victims of the brutal Syrian civil war, and more than half of them are children who are at great risk of Islamic radicalization and sex trafficking. But in the midst of the darkness, Heart for Lebanon is offering the hope of the gospel. Through their hope centers, Heart for Lebanon is feeding these children, giving them a Christian education, and introducing them to Jesus for the very first time. Hearts are really open right now, and the Lord is changing their lives, but we need your help. Your gift of $22 will rescue 4 children. Your gift of $98 will rescue 18 children, an entire classroom full. Will you please help us help these children who will go home one day and reach their nations for Christ? Call now, 866-485-9187. 866-485-9187. There's also a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Please pray and please give. 866-485-9187.
We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Great to have you here, and always great to talk to Penny Nance, CEO and President of Concerned Women for America. You can check out her great commentaries at CapitolHillBrief.org. Penny, we were talking a lot about this GOP tax plan that has just been released, cutting corporate taxes, cutting middle class taxes. Where do you see things going from here? Because proposing something does not necessarily guarantee that what has been proposed will come out the other end.
No, and as we know, the Senate's where good bills go to die.
Yeah.
And, has been, the House did their work on repealing Obamacare. And so that Senate is always the issue, although it seems like things are getting shaken up over there, and I hope so. We just had 4 judges that got through, fantastic constitutionalists last night or a couple nights ago. And so I feel like things are starting to pick up over in the Senate and people are starting to get the picture.
Good.
Lindsey Graham said if they don't pass tax reform, they're dead. And he's right.
Yeah.
This is their last chance to prove that they understand what the American people want them to do and they're capable of doing their job.
Good. That's good to hear. That's interesting. I want to see things get better. I think this is the heart of the president. I really do, Penny, going back to all of the things that he said, even going back to the campaign. I think despite his billionaire status and people talking about Trump being in the 1% and all the rest, I think he really understands as a businessman what it means to people to be able to work hard and to enjoy the fruits of their labor. And I wish more people in Congress would pick up on that same sympathy.
Yeah, it's almost the oddest thing. And I can, I've now been with the president and dinner and met with him several times, and I can vouch for the fact that he really is a blue-collar billionaire.
Wow.
This is not just a shtick. Like, he really gets it, and I don't know how that happened. I mean, I think he's a guy that just never lost touch with his roots and stayed very close to the people that work for him, the construction workers and the bricklayers and, you know, all the men and women that it takes to change the skyline, you know, of New York. I think he identifies with those folks more than he does his fellow billionaires.
It seems so. Yeah, it really does. Well, now, speaking of President Trump, this is an interesting development that's just come up. This judge, the federal judge who has blocked the president from his plan to ban future transgenders in the U.S. military. I know this has been an ongoing story as the president has put out a memo and tweeted about it and all the rest. But I found it really interesting, Penny, and was interested to get your take on this, because one of the things the judge said is that these transgender service members who say that Trump's policy violates their rights to due process and equal protection under the Constitution are likely to succeed in this claim. And that was the reason that this was, you know, this is what was said, why this was done. I mean, what do you make of this? Where in the Constitution does it talk about transgenders having the right to be in the military? It's absurd.
Right. And there's all kinds of reasons why people are not qualified to serve. I mean, there's all sorts of physical reasons, and there's mental health issues. There's, you know, all sorts of reasons why that the U.S. military can refuse to accept people. I mean, it's actually a very elite group when you think about it. And so, this is why you need good constitutionalist judges. This is why CWA, while the other side is blowing up and you know, going nuts over Melania's shoes, we're busy packing the courts.
Right.
So
I love it.
Happy for them to do what they want to do. Meanwhile, we're keeping our eye on the ball and making sure that we're working with the Senate, that these solid constitutional judges that don't feel the right to legislate from the bench, that understand that they're simply to look at the Constitution and to rule in light of what the Constitution says, not what they wish it says or how they're feeling that particular day, but what it actually says. And so I think that the answer, the antidote to what you just described is us doing more and making sure we are full on, we get all 160 lower court positions filled up as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. And by the way, can I give a shout out to Melania? Because she has great shoes. I love her shoes.
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And so is Ivanka. Beautiful women.
Yeah.
Well appointed and nice.
Yeah, I just said that. Every time I see a Melania outfit, I just like, oh, she's so pretty. I love that outfit.
Right. Oh, wait, I can't afford that. Okay.
I know. I'll just have to look at her. I'm never going to be able to wear anything like
that. Gabbana, beautiful. I can enjoy it. To me, it's almost like art. I have a real heart. I really enjoy fashion. I always have. And sort of the path not taken for me is the fashion world. That's what I wanted to, you know, maybe go to New York and work for a designer, and that's not what God had for me, but I certainly still enjoy it very much.
Wow, that's neat. Well, you're very fashionable, so I could have seen you in that if you want to ever do that. You could. Well, you know, going to the judges issue, you had mentioned before that we've seen these four judges finally confirmed, one of which wasn't that the Dogma Lives Loudly judge, Amy Barrett.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that was, we're in our Capitol brief we're going to have this week some quotes from the press conference that I was invited to do. This was one of those moments, you know, Janet, where you're like, what just happened? I was in the LBJ beautiful room in the Capitol and at a press conference flanked by, I don't know, 12 senators, Judiciary Committee senators, and a couple of other outside groups that were Catholic organizations. They were all men.
I was the
only woman in the entire group. and so that was kind of interesting. But the point of the press conference was to really push back on what we're starting to see as this religious litmus test that the left is raising for Trump's, not just his judges, but we had Russell Vogt, who is a nominee for OMB.
Mm-hmm.
And their faith is being pulled apart and somehow used to disqualify them for the job. And so it to the point, and you know, I've seen this almost every day, even on a personal level, where the left will take something, you know, opposition research is real. And, you know, there's the left has dossiers out there on any number of people, people who run for office, people who are, you know, out front on issues. And what they do is they take one little thing. What they did for Amy Barrett is they took one case, or maybe it was, I think it was an article that she had written.
Right.
They took something that she said, they twisted it. To mean exactly the opposite of what the whole point of the article was, actually.
Yes.
And tried to tar her with it. And thank God they were not successful. But we have to push back on that. There is, you know, the Constitution's very clear that there is no religious test for public office. There cannot be. And
yes.
If that's the case, then, you know, an entire group of, you know, evangelical and Catholic believers will be disqualified for ever serving in the government.
Well, it's such a good point. And I wonder how much of this, my little cynical mind, but I do think there's some truth to this. When you see people like Dianne Feinstein or Bernie Sanders grandstanding and calling Vogt and Barrett these extremists and the dogma lives loudly, to me, that just looks like a transparent dog whistle to the left. It's like, hey, look at these crazy extremists here. I'm fighting the crazy religious extremists. It's a real, it's a real
money raiser. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right.
There's a hatred that seems to be present there, or at least a signaling of these aren't our sorts of people.
Well, and it's wrong. And whether you're talking about a born again Christian who believes what the Bible teaches on life, or you're talking about someone who is of a Muslim faith that believes, you know, in traditional marriage, you know, it's wrong. There is no constitutional litmus test on religion. You
right.
cannot do it. And, you know, I think whatever your faith, you know, this is, it's really viewpoint discrimination, right? Because they would never pull this trick on any of the, you know, those two faiths that I mentioned. But
right.
it's okay
right.
because Amy Bear was Catholic, or is Catholic.
Right.
But it's wrong. And we have to call them out on it. And it's, you know, it's discouraging, but we've got to fight.
I agree with you completely, Penny. Where do things stand now? There are a lot more judges that still need to be confirmed. Can we expect
yeah.
now to see the process speeding up a little bit?
I certainly hope so. And we're pressing Mitch McConnell for that. I mean, at the rate that it was going, it was basically down to one a month.
Oh, man.
And, you know, inappropriate. That can't be what happens. And so now I think, and let's remember the reason. Of course, the reason was that that the Senate, the left, was using the rules and requiring 30 hours of debate for every single nominee.
Wow.
And just dragging their heels and making it as slow as possible.
That's it.
And so we've said, look, you know, at some point when they're just trying to obfuscate the issue and they're just trying to slow down, you can't allow that anymore.
Absolutely. Penny, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. CapitolHillBrief.org. This hour, Janet Mefford Today, brought to you in part by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization helping people struggling with credit card debt. Their number, 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org. God bless. We'll see you next time.